Welcome to Kingston Reid's Word to the Wise podcast series for HR and safety professionals.
Hello, I'm Michael Stutley.
And I'm Miriam Power. Today, we are bringing you the final in our three-part series dealing with management and mental health. Michael, we've traversed the rocky ground of determining as a threshold issue whether a performance or conduct management process is always appropriate, and if it is appropriate, what steps would make it reasonable.
Yes, and we've considered the scenario where an employee being managed for performance or conduct or both stops attending work claiming that the process has caused a mental health injury and the types of claim that may arise from that, for example, workers' compensation.
Yeah, and we've also touched briefly on claims by the employee that the management process has constituted bullying, harassment or discrimination. The employer's response to those claims may be guided by their substance and timing, and if they're made some time down the track or involve vague allegations with low likelihood of cogent supporting evidence, it may not always be possible to conduct any proper inquiry.
And we spoke with Dr. Tom Lee from ReadyMed, who discussed his role as an expert in providing independent medical assessments for fitness for work. We identified that an independent assessment may initially be indicated where the nature and extent of the employee's incapacity is unclear, from the information provided by the employee's own practitioner or the employee themselves. We discuss the circumstances where an employee attends a medical assessment with someone like Dr. Tom and raises issues about the workplace.
And Michael, that's often the case. We identified that if it appears that a lengthy absence may ensue, it would be prudent to arrange an independent assessment before too much time has passed. But at what point do you think that should be?
Well, of course, it would be dependent on a number of things, but if someone has been absent from work for a period of weeks, that would generally be the trigger to have an independent medical assessment done.
And if the employer becomes aware of concerns about bullying, harassment or discrimination through the vehicle of a medical assessment, is it at that point that the employer has the best chance of addressing those concerns? The medical expert could then be asked to assess whether the employee is fit to participate in any process to address their concerns.
It's a good point, Miriam. A process to address the concerns could involve a number of things. The employee might be asked to participate in interviews or provide supporting evidence for their claims. They might have to deal with a determination that their allegations are too vague or historical to be investigated or to be properly conducted. The employee may need to be fit enough to respond to contradictory evidence or findings that some or all of their allegations have not been substantiated.
That's right, Michael. And in our last podcast, we considered the scenario where, as a result of matters raised by an employee in an independent medical assessment, upon investigation, problems with the management process leading to the employee's absence were identified. Michael, your recommendation was that the employer take appropriate management action, whether it be retraining, a cultural decision review, or even disciplinary action. This, of course, would not necessarily prevent a successful claim against the employer in an external tribunal, but you identified that it could mitigate penalties or damages. But what about a process where there is no identified problem with the management process, but the assessment is that the employee is experiencing a mental health issue that is at least partly connected with events at work?
Well, it's important to remember that not all injuries in the workplace are the result of an employee's negligence or breach of statutory obligations. In WA and some other states, workers' compensation legislation expressly excludes stress claims arising out of reasonable management action. This is why we stressed the importance of ensuring rigour around management process to ensure that they are demonstrably reasonable and to make inquiries, if appropriate, if a claim is made about bullying, harassment or discrimination.
All right. So let's assume the employee remains off work until paid leave entitlements are exhausted. And I should say something about paid leave entitlements. It's not every case that you would have an employee with paid leave entitlements. So if their paid personal leave is exhausted, they may wish to go into other paid leave entitlements like annual leave or long service leave. So we would say that that would need to be assessed on a case-to-case basis as to whether that should occur.
Well, it's been my observation, as I'm sure it's been yours, Miriam, that these issues tend to escalate when the employee's paid leave entitlements run out. The employee really needs to understand what the future relationship with the employee is likely to be. An employee cannot remain indefinitely on unpaid leave and the relationship needs to be resolved.
Yeah, and experience tells us that it does tend to bring matters to a head and it can go a number of ways. For example, if somebody's paid leave has run out, it's not uncommon for them to state a desire and a capacity to return to work. And it's not uncommon for unfitness to work to align almost to the day with paid leave entitlements. But it could also mean that an employee who remains genuinely unfit may feel economic pressure to return to work.
Yes, that's a good point, Miriam, but employers have an obligation to take reasonable steps for employee safety. Any employee who intends to return to work after a lengthy absence due to illness should be directed to obtain a medical clearance before doing so.
And experience tells us that if the reason for the employee's absence has been because of the reasonable management of a performance or conduct issue, that issue still subsists when they return. So regardless of any adjustment to hours or duties, they will still be required to participate in that process if they do return to work.
Absolutely, yes. Saying you can do all of your duties except participating in legitimate performance or conduct management basically means that you cannot return to the workplace at all, because the requirement to be reasonably managed is an inherent requirement of any role.
So, Michael, this is the point where many employers may jump to a termination decision, and that's not unexpected. The employer may think that they have done everything right. So what are the problems with simply dismissing an employee at this point?
Well, it is risky to base a decision about capacity to perform inherent requirements on an employee's own assessment of their capacity or on an assessment by a practitioner who may not have the requisite expert specialisation. This is where we would normally recommend employers either liaise with permission directly with the employee's treating practitioner or arrange a fitness assessment with an independent medical examiner.
I think it's important for employers to understand that disability discrimination or adverse action issues could arise here. If an employee is assessed as having a mental health disability, unless the disability prevents the employee from performing the inherent requirement of his or her role, there's an obligation on the employer to make reasonable adjustments to accommodate the disability. So let's say the employee is assessed as capable of participating in reasonable management processes and they return to work. The first thing that happens is that they're going to be required to attend a performance or conduct meeting. As a result of that process, they're found to have such performance or conduct deficiencies that the employer wishes to move to a termination. Michael, what do you see as the risks here?
Well, the trouble with performance issues after a long absence is that if the employer wishes to rely on a valid reason for dismissal, the employee would need to be provided with sufficient time to demonstrate improvement. So, like it or not, the intervening absence of the employee will have the practical effect of extending the time period of a performance process. If there was a conduct concern, the process dealing with it would need to be closed out.
Of course, if employees are protected by unfair dismissal regime, in addition to the valid reason, employers must implement a fair process in any dismissal. All of the usual factors would apply, such as availability of support persons, notification that dismissal is being contemplated, and the grounds and opportunity for the employee to show cause where dismissal should not occur, etc., etc.
It is perhaps the right time to refer to a very recent decision, Miriam, that the Fair Work Commission handed down on the 20th of August. A university lecturer with 26 years of service took an extended period of absence due to illness. She was asked to have her treating practitioner complete a medical information form.
Yeah, Michael, and I don't think it'd be an exaggeration to say that this sent the employee into what might best be described as incandescent rage. The employee claimed that she was embarrassed to show the form to her doctor as it implied she was a malingerer or a shirker. She lodged a complaint with the university that she was being bullied and harassed and that there was an attempt to breach her privacy.
Unsurprisingly, the university directed the employee to attend an independent medical examination. She failed to attend that appointment on the grounds that she had a related complaint pending.
And that was a privacy complaint, presumably.
Correct.
And she was told that her privacy concerns had been investigated and weren't substantiated. There were then various unsuccessful attempts to have the employee communicate with the university about her capacity to work. She made a number of demands regarding any return to work, including an alternative reporting line, use of an unshared office. She was directed to attend another independent medical examination and complete the requisite consent form. And here's where it gets really interesting. The employee purported to complete the consent form as amended by her, which included a provision that she be able to tape record the appointment. This was unsurprisingly rejected by the medical examiner, so the appointment didn't proceed and she was ultimately dismissed for failure to comply with a reasonable direction to attend the appointment.
But at least she was honest about her intentions to record.
Indeed.
So the lecturer brought an unfair dismissal claim, saying that she had attended the appointment, albeit with a modified consent form. However, the commission noted that the lecturer's position that all she needed to do was to arrive at an IME appointment and do no more, such as signing a valid consent form, was disingenuous. It was both in substance and in form a failure to attend in a manner such that the examination could proceed.
So it was found that the university followed a fair process in implementing the dismissal, so it was able to successfully defend the claim. However, the case involved an employee who effectively engaged in a game of semantics with her employer, hoping to wear the employer down so that she could return to work on terms dictated by her.
Ultimately, a win for the employer, but hard fought and also costly given that legal fees cannot generally be recovered in the Fair Work Commission.
So on that note, Michael, we will conclude our series on management and mental health, and we hope that it has raised some interesting issues for our listeners. Our key takeaway issues are always manage excess leave balances and consider whether any management process has been appropriate, and if so, ensure that any management process is reasonable. Importantly, obtain early assessment of capacity when extended absences occur and respond appropriately and timeously to any complaints about those management processes. All leave should be documented, and employers must ensure fitness for all aspects of the employee's substantive role, save for any reasonable adjustments for a disability or a restructured return to work. And of course, ensure that there's a sound, defensible basis for any termination based on capacity.
Those are great takeaways, Miriam. I think ultimately what it comes down to is reasonableness will enable you to withstand external scrutiny. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. We will be posting on our website an article which deals with the matters canvassed in our podcast, and we hope that you will find it useful.
Stay fair but focused, folks.